Commission items. The, Mr. Woodruff, Mr. Tanguini, are you presenting these, or Mr. Woodruff?
With the indulgence of the chair, I'd like just a couple of seconds to introduce some of the items that we'll be discussing in the committee today. As you know, we're moving forward on the FY07 budget. This budget has been, spent an awful lot of time working on it, but it still already faces a number of challenges. Those are challenges we've discussed repeatedly. While revenue is growing because of increased ridership, expenditures are growing as well. And we continue to have several risk factors, particularly workers' comp, fuel energy prices, and labor settlements. Now, some of those are drawing into clearer focus, and we have proposed a number of modest adjustments. But we also need to work with you over the execution of the 07 budget to recognize these issues. So what we're doing is, as we get ready to execute the 07 budget, assuming approval, is looking at an overtime initiative to manage our overtime spending, looking at ways to further develop revenue, and looking at ways to contain costs. We've already taken a step towards that effort, cost containment and operational efficiency last week with our initial staff realignment. And we're currently working together to look at the next several levels to see how we can better organize our activities to achieve both improved results and cost-efficient service delivery. Now, this effort is being led by our senior staff with input at all levels, which is new, frankly, for the way we've done these things in the authority. We'll also be looking for input from the RAC and from the JCC. We're going to bring our first cut analysis of that effort to the board next week. We also look to include this effort in the board governance initiative, which is ongoing. We'll use the product of all these discussions to update our 07 work plan so that those work plans can reflect the constraints of this 07 budget and we can execute along the lines of the expectations that we established today. I appreciate the time for that opening statement, and I'll ask Mr. Woodruff to dive into the information and action.
Mr. Woodruff?
Yes, sir. First item, 2A, follow-up questions and answers. We have two. First one, question request was to provide a listing of high-priority bus services, which we have done. We point out that there's $3.3 million in proposed service improvements in the 07 budget. That's in the unfunded category right now. And then there's a list of service improvements, which would increase ridership, and that's provided for you. On the second page of that, page 3 of 4, also outlines the process for eliminating low-performance bus routes. And if there are no questions on that, there was also a request to provide the status of the 06 current year Metro Matters expenditures, which we have done. And I would like to discuss that ever so briefly. You see, if you go down to the first gray area that says Metro Matters and you see a balance of $150 million, there's money in there. Right above there it says debt service, $12.2 million. We did not need to expend debt service this year because we didn't borrow money. So that can be removed from the balance. We anticipate from these numbers, which are, as it says, as of the end of May, we'll probably spend another $30 to $40 million through the end of the fiscal year. So that leaves you a balance in the capital program of roughly $108 million, which is 23%. When we close 06, we'll go through it just like we did 05, which we've presented to you previously, coming back today to make some recommendations. And we will look at all these balances, see what needs to be carried forward, what's available. We're also going to look at the cash flow on all the projects, so hopefully we can reduce these ending balances even more as we refine the cash flow estimates. So in a nutshell, that's where we are on 06 in the capital program.
Are there questions or discussion on these issues? Now, the balance, the unexpended balance of $13.5 million, what is the status of that money?
I'm sorry, Mr. Grimm, which one?
On the Metro Matters, the first shaded line,
yes,
below the title, above the first shaded line, there's $13.5 million, which had been budgeted for debt service that was not used.
Right.
So what is the status of that gross balance?
That money will just become available to us at the end of the year because we didn't borrow money this year.
Right. So we have, the board can then determine just what it wants to do with $13.5 million.
Yes, sir. And we'll come back to you in October with the big picture on all of these accounts?
The big picture.
Well, meaning how much of this money is available to you, how much needs to be carried forward for projects that just may be behind schedule or for whatever reason payments weren't made, that type, the same analysis we did for 05.
What was the amount of capital contribution by the District of Columbia in this fiscal year?
For 06, it was $48 million.
So, in fact, the District of Columbia has contributed, and we've repaid this amount. You got the money?
Yes, sir.
It's in the bank?
Yes, sir.
The District of Columbia has contributed $48 million. Our proportion share of $13.5 million would be available to us.
I don't know the answer to that because of Metro Matters.
We do really do need, you know, this raises an issue, especially a significant issue, which is that unlike in the area of the appropriation of the operations budget, we don't have a policy on these matters, and we really ought to have a policy because we are at sea in terms of what happens, you know, on this type of issue, and I don't think we ought to be at sea. We ought to have a sense of what would occur in a situation like this. We have a much larger amount going back to FY 2005. We have some $32 million that was unexpended. May I suggest that unless there's an objection that we have some kind of a vehicle for us to discuss this issue, some kind of a proposal that's presented to us on a policy. Is there objection to having that done?
I thought we had a, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if there is no policy for capital balances.
No, ma'am. The analogy on the operating side, at the end of the year, if there is operating subsidy that was not used, there is an audit adjustment procedure that we go through where that money is identified by jurisdiction and then refunded to the local governments.
Right.
On the capital improvement program, if in theory we got to the end of a year and not all of the money was committed or spent, there is no existing board policy on what staff should do.
Right.
And later in the agenda, there's a presentation on what staff would propose to do with some current unexpended balances or uncommitted balances. We've got recommendations on moving some projects forward, but clearly it's in the arena of board policy to help us figure out how to bring these projects back to you.
Part of the reason is on the operating subsidy side, at the end of the fiscal year, you can't go back and move more people. You can't go and provide more bus service in arrears. We're facing substantial unmet needs in terms of our capital improvements, and so we're constantly deferring those capital needs. So the going forward assumption, the prior assumption, and the assumption we're operating under is that every time there's existing balances, it gives us an opportunity to restack those priorities. The fact is that the priorities and the needs in the system are not neatly jurisdictionally aligned. They're not equivalent to the operating funding formula. Those needs are spread throughout the system. And so that's a concern would be dividing up any remaining resources according towards any kind of jurisdictional formula wouldn't reflect the actual capital needs of the investment needs of the system.
Well, I certainly don't have any objection to a policy, but I think the policy ought to be comprehensive, and it ought to talk about the potential for utilizing any unused funds for other requirements that have been identified. I think that if we have a policy that looks at both the availability of funds and the requirements that we have, it would be comprehensive.
Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't this difficulty really an outgrowth of us entering into Metro Matters, that in the past the capital program is very much there's a project, there's an amount of money for the project.
It would just roll forward.
It just rolled over.
Yeah.
And in fact, we've entered into Metro Matters. Are there now two paths, as it were, Metro Matters projects?
Yes.
And then other capital projects?
Yeah.
And those other capital projects still just kind of roll forward.
Yeah.
the problem is under Metro Matters, we've got this cash situation.
Right.
And you've got the money, but aren't there indeed projects, notwithstanding the debt service, but projects identified that money in that column is intended to go for, or have all those projects just come in way under budget at this point?
We don't know yet, because at June 30th, we'll take a look back at FY06 and look project by project and figure out which projects came in under budget, which projects are under budget because they were delayed, which projects conceivably could be at risk of going over budget, and we'll make that report back to you at the first quarter of 07. And that gives you the opportunity, if there's any unneeded, don't like that word, but uncommitted funds, you as the policy group to give us direction about how to apply those unexpended or uncommitted funds.
Okay. I think, you know, this is very critical, and we need to look at actuals here and not deal really with hypotheticals, because this is new territory for the authority in terms of how to go back and spend these monies, because they were all clearly developed under the Metro Matters program. And as I said, notwithstanding the debt service question, which obviously if we get beyond a point, there's extra money in debt service that we didn't spend.
To your point of discussing actual situations, later in the agenda in item 3C, we would be doing that. 3C is an action item where staff would be proposing the board take an action to specifically approve new projects that have never been included in the CIP, and that's exactly the discussion that's being held right now. That's where that
But I'm fits. Talking in actual more in terms of reconciliation as opposed to coming up with new projects, in the sense that if there's projects that haven't been paid for one reason or another, and in the past we've got this history of rolling the money forward to pay for those projects are still going to have to be paid for.
Yes, and that's exactly what's going on.
Metro Matters is finite.
Mm-hmm.
So
we need to do that. We need to show you in October, once we've closed out 06, we need to show you just what you're saying, which projects maybe are just behind schedule, still need the funding, which have come in favorable bids and may have some money available. We also need to update you on the revenue projections, because you've got to see the whole picture of revenue and expenditures before you can make a policy decision on these things.
Well, that's my point. I think we need to let the train travel a little further down the track before we develop a policy.
Okay. That could be. And
we don't have the experience basis at this point to actually make that decision.
And we're trying to get into it as quickly as we can, but, you know, in an educated way. Last meeting, we came forth with the FY05 closeout, and we identified $38.9 million of uncommitted funds at the end of the year. We've now gone back project by project and determined exactly what you're saying. How many of these are still live projects that were just delayed, but the funding needs to remain? And that's in this agenda item. But there's also a fair number of projects that came in under budget at the end of 05, and that now truly is uncommitted funds. And at June 30th of this year, we're going to do the same thing with the 06 program. And hopefully, every single year, we'll do the same thing as the year closes out.
Okay, and that's in that later action item. We're going to discuss that, so I don't want to belabor that issue now, because I do have some thoughts on that item. But it's also very critical that we be careful with the way this is laid out here in terms of this number. You know, we're sitting here saying there's 150 million dollars of money that it looks like by this document that we just didn't know what to do with.
Right.
And that's
right.
Just not true.
Right. That should not be the headline.
That,
we're trying very carefully to say
that. Out of this at all.
It's not found money. We're not sitting on a gold mine. Metro is not rolling in the dough. Just the opposite. We have a huge unfunded need in the capital program.
But the fact of the matter is that we have, you know, that's why I focused in on the $13.5 million, because those were monies that were unneeded in terms of debt service. So it's not a question. Now, you could add the $13.5 million to some other purpose, clearly. But the purpose for which it was established as an expenditure is clearly coming on or is about to come and go.
Absolutely correct.
And leaving $13.5 million unused.
But if I may continue, even in that regard, the Metro Matters item is a finite package of 6 years, effectively. And it may come to pass, you know, there's debt service here that we didn't use, but it may come to pass in the portion of that 6 years that you have to issue debt. And if the debt service may well exceed whatever the debt service number. So I think that the policy, whatever it is we develop, needs to be thought of in the global sense of the six-year window.
I agree with that, yes.
As opposed to, oh, on an annual basis, we'll take this piece, you know, and rob Peter and pay Paul later.
Well, I just thank you very much, Mr. Smith. I appreciate all of those points, and let me also emphasize that there is a distinction between the Metro Matters capital expenditures and the CIP, where, you know, we know that in, we're going to deal with this later on, in 2005, there was $32 million in CIP funds that were uncommitted at the end of the year, at the end of that year. But I appreciate everything that's been said, but as a legislator in the District of Columbia, who is very much in touch with the capital budget demands in the District of Columbia, similar to the operational dollars and the demands that are there, I mean, Metro WMATA is a whopping expense for D.C. And when we run across the fact that there are dollars that are unexpended, coupled with the fact that we don't have a policy in place that relates to that failure to commit or expend or obligate, this is a concern to me.
Sure.
Because there's a lot that we need to do in the District of Columbia with capital projects for which we could use this money if Metro doesn't need it. Now, I don't reach those issues today because I'm just simply suggesting that we do need to have a policy. It's obviously something that has to take into account a lot of considerations. But unless there's objection, I would like to suggest that we begin to develop a policy. Certainly in light of the fiscal realities of what we're dealing with, I appreciate that. But I'd like to see some kind of a document in the future that you know, presents something for us to discuss. And I recognize that there are some complexities. Mr. Faulkner.
Certainly always recognize the need for policy documents. One of the big concerns, as you said, about a large chunk of the district budget. Ms. Hudgens, who can't be with us today, and I were somewhat admonished by our chairman and colleague Monday looking at the Metro budget. I'm sure we took the reaction we could to keep it in line. But you made a distinction saying that there's a difference between the Metro Matters program and the CIP. I don't see that difference because, as I recall, the Metro Matters program is a package of our most important CIP item. So I don't see a bright line of distinction.
So unless there's an objection, I'm going to ask that a proposal be developed for our review on these issues. Mr. Zimmerman?
Objection, a proposal be developed, although I suppose the question would be what proposal is it supposed to develop?
Well, we have a policy in place on operation surpluses, you know, at the end of the year. I'm not suggesting that should be, you know, imposed verbatim on the capital side. But I think that can provide some guidance.
So one of the things we struggle with is prioritization of capital needs. Talking about moving to performance-based budgeting in FY08, I'd mentioned before, I think we want to come back to you with a proposal about how staff should prioritize new capital needs and get a board policy that gives us some direction that subject matter, so that if uncommitted funding becomes available, we know that the very next project we would like to suggest to you be funded is on an existing list.
Mr. Chairman, I said you're talking about having something to be brought to the members to look at and discuss in the committee. That's fine. It does seem to me there's a fundamental difference between the operating budget, capital budget, and the nature of the carry funds. An operating budget, in principle, leftover funds are leftover funds. They go to the next budget or whatever. But the capital budget, which is by its nature, the fear of years, doesn't matter. So be careful about that.
Thank you very much. Further discussion on this matter? And we'll move on.
Mr. Chairman, it is unclear what they're directed to do. So.
Well, it is unclear because we don't. I think we would be assisted by having some kind of even skeletal concept of what a policy might look like. We could, of course, and I'm pleased to agendize a general discussion without any discussion vehicle on this issue. If you would be more comfortable with that, I'll agendize it for the next meeting.
May I suggest that the staff would work with JCC to build a framework around this and come back with an information item?
Apart from that, I just wanted to say that whatever the policy is, I think, as I indicated previously, it ought to be a comprehensive policy. I also think that there is merit in looking at Metro Matters as a package, because that's what it is, and that view should be incorporated in whatever the policy is. So I do think that it would be helpful to come back with the draft policy, and I guess it's just a place to start, but I would hate to just have it focused on 1 year and one line item, I guess.
But it doesn't need to.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's a preliminary step. Mm-hmm. I mean, we may in fact decide that we don't want any policy.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's just, it seems to me we have a choice. We could have a freewheeling discussion without a discussion vehicle, or we can have a freewheeling discussion with a discussion vehicle. And it seems to me the latter is, I find it helpful to have something to look at and think about.
I agree.
You know, that's all I'm suggesting. But in any case, we're guaranteed a pre-ruling discussion.
That's the one guarantee.
One way or another.
Right now, Mrs. Mack, you don't have any comment on this high-priority bus service, the first part of the discussion. And you are our leader on the year of the bus, and this is interesting information.
Well, are we now talking about item 3C?
No. So we'll wait for that. All right. I just wanted to be sure that you reviewed this information in the first part of the Q&A.
Yes.
Do you see this part that says additional routes
yes.
that have the potential to increase ridership if crowding and service reliability and improve? Did you note that?
I did note that, and this is an area that I'm really quite interested in and have talked about repeatedly, so I support it. It's moving forward, I guess I can say that.
A purchase card and telecom improvements?
Yes, a couple of good news items we want to share with the board. We've recently signed an agreement with a new provider for our purchase cards,
yeah.
And the authority received a $30,000 signing bonus. Also, the amount of rebate earned on the transactions has essentially doubled. So the good news is we should receive an additional $200,000 in bonus and rebate in fiscal 07. So we're proud of that initiative. The second thing I wanted to mention is the audit of our phone bills. It's pretty common if you go through your phone bills, your utility bills, your health payment bills. Firms come in, they have expertise in that area. In this case, in the phone bills, they'll look at rates, they'll look at lines that are in use or not in use, and you can generate savings. The fee to the company is paid out of the savings. So in this case, we estimate that we'll save $60,000 to $80,000 a year in our phone bill, and the vendor that will provide this service will be paid a portion of that for their time and effort. So another little good news story we wanted to share with the board.
Discussion, discussion, discussion. Thank you very much, Mr. Woodward. Congratulations on that project.
Thank you, thank you. The next item, since the package was mailed out, we have received responses or comments on the budget from all of the jurisdictions, and the package that was given out today does have those. We just didn't have them when this was mailed on Friday. And I'd just like to summarize for you. We did, of course, go through all of them, read all of them, and see what the comments were. What seemed to be common themes were there were many commendations for not proposing a fare increase for the second year in a row. There was continued support for the Metro Matters program, a great deal of support, and thanks to the board for adding the bus service planners that were recommended by JCC. There was support for passenger surveys, and then a number of favorable comments on improving the budget process and the transparency, improving communication. We are trying very, very hard to work with the JCC and get their input on everything and brief them in advance. The more realistic revenue estimates and we've discussed this several times. We have looked at revenue trends, and we have reflected in the 07 budget what we think will be the revenues. We will not have the surpluses we've seen in the past couple of years. Support of the CIP, and a great deal of support for the quarterly reporting to the board and to the public and to the JCC on both the operating and capital budgets. And as I said, you have all the letters now in the packet that was handed out today. One other thing I'll mention quickly, this moves us to 08 a little bit, but we as staff will try to further improve the input that we're getting. We certainly want to hear from the JCC, we want to hear from the Metro Riders folks, the RAC folks. So we, as we develop the calendar for 08, we will make an effort on the staff side to get more input, and of course any input the board would want to have, we'll accommodate that as well. That's it for the comments.
Discussion or questions on this matter? Okay, then let's proceed to the action item. The FY 2007 operating budget check.
Did you make any comments?
We approved the minutes.
We have a form.
We have a form. We have five members.
We don't require any jurisdiction?
No.
I don't know.
Approval of the consideration of the FY 2007 operating budget.
In your package is a tabular form that we've been using all budget season to keep track of where we started and where we are. The very first row in the black folded section is the revenue, expense, and subsidy that was originally proposed back in December. The first main section called budget updates are kind of the technical, just budgetary adjustments that happen through the course of any budget process. What's highlighted up there in the yellow and the blue are things that have changed since the last time we brought you this update. Some very minor changes, self-funded emergency and police items. Probably the biggest issue is item J there. We've added another $3 million to the diesel fuel line item. We've now executed diesel swaps for about 3 million gallons. The price is not yet down to the original $2 assumption that was in the budget, but we're trying to close the gap between the worst-case scenario of sit and do nothing versus, you know, swap at a high rate and lock in a problem. So it's going to be a continuous process all through the year where I think the example was average costing, average pricing. We'll lock in a million gallons, see what happens, lock in another million gallons, see what happens, and go through the year like that. The other notable item up in the top is item M. We've now added money into the proposed budget for both a bus and rail passenger survey. There were many, many comments in the jurisdictional letters favoring, supporting, requiring, requesting these jurisdictional passenger surveys be done this coming year. What that brings us to is a $2.7 million reduction in subsidy from what was originally proposed in December. We would just stop at that point. The next major section are what we've been calling the board policy initiatives: bus service changes, rail service changes, living wage, customer service improvements. And I guess the dilemma that we're in right now is the policy initiatives would cost $9.7 million worth of additional subsidy. We've only been able to identify a reduction of 2.7, so there's not enough of a reduction to fund all of the board policy issues. It's going to become a policy discussion amongst you. I do want to draw your attention to the bottom left of that page. Obviously, reading the newspapers, there is growing pressure on electricity, power costs, EPCO rates going up. We're not quite sure what that's going to do to the budget, but it's not going to be small dollars. We've talked a couple of times about workers' comp funding, and as we know, we're moving towards negotiation with our unions, and there could be some labor cost pressure. Those budget risks, in rough order of magnitude, could be a $10 million hit to this budget. So at this point, what staff recommendation would be to take that $2.7 million subsidy reduction and beef up the power accounts by that amount of money, and this would put the subsidy back at the exact level as was proposed in the December budget. And then as we move through fiscal 08, if revenue comes in higher than we thought or if there's other favorability, we would propose implementing the service changes as they become affordable.
Is Does that complete your presentation?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of comments, I guess, and a question. The first question being, I don't understand why items 2, 8, and 9 are even in the document.
I'm sorry, which ones?
2B, 8, and 9.
Yes,
2B, 8, and 9. Did we not approve those already?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. They're just here as a placeholder, and they will be approved in the budget. There's no subsidy impact. I just put them up there as a reminder. These are things that changed since the last time I briefed you on this. They are approved.
They're not an issue in any way.
Correct. They're not an issue. And conceivably, item 2A would not be an issue. There's no subsidy impact to that. The new cost for the customer service initiatives would be paid for by new revenue.
Right.
And 2B1 would be no subsidy impact also. We would propose doing that.
Okay.
But the board policy initiatives that have a subsidy increase, we're going back and forth about.
Okay. Well, then my question, I guess, is your recommendation verbally just a second ago to hold the budget at a previous proposal,
yes,
with including the 2.7 million in subsidy that's shown on the bottom line of part one to back up the budget risk,
yes, sir,
the budget risk below, is not at all congruent with the resolution that's in the pack.
No, I'm sorry. The resolution here is really just a placeholder, and we were going back and forth about what to write the resolution to be, but pending the discussion that I think is about to happen, any numbers I put here would be wrong.
Okay. Well, I'm willing to put forward the motion to do as Mr. Harkin recommended just a moment ago, to include the budget as previously proposed, including the $2.7 million that's shown on the subtotal on item one, to backfill potential risks that occur that are shown above the presentation. Beg for a second.
before I call for a second, let me just be sure I understand the motion.
I didn't say
you are moving to approve the FY07 operating budget. Am I right?
As previously proposed, item one,
which means that there would be a $2.7 million surplus, which you are you suggesting how that $2.7 million be committed?
Would that be held in reserve for the potential risk of electricity and propulsion power, the workman's comp, third-party claims funding, and the labor fund?
That's the motion. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Mr. Chairman, clarification.
Mr. Zimmerman.
I understand that the motion does not include the items under two.
Notwithstanding those that are budget neutral, which I think are not even an item for the question.
Well, under
clarification.
Under two is $9.7 million, for which we would have to do something to add $6.9 million to the $2.7 million to fully fund number two.
Mm-hmm.
Absent that, there's $6.9 million shortfall between what's available and what would be needed to fully fund number two. But what Mr. Smith is saying is that he is not committing the $2.7 million to any of the items under two.
Nor is he recommending, apparently, the actions under 2B, for instance, bus overcrowding relief, bus priority priorities, bus security posts.
That's correct. Pending actions that would occur through the year, as Mr. Harkin noted, as revenues became available.
Well, I'm not sure I understand what that means when we're taking action on the budget now. Mr. Chairman, I would like to say that, you know, this, what we have on the screen here, besides reminding you that I need to make an appointment with my eye doctor, I wonder, once again, have we lost our license to use PowerPoint or something? There's scant little information here presented in a way that, unfortunately, I have a printed table in front of me, but I think that's really kind of a waste of time, unless some of you have much better eyesight than mine. And the resolution we have is, of course, a placeholder, It's not the one we're actually going to act on. The table that's included with it, I know is wrong, because I know at least one number in there that is wrong. There's been much communication between my jurisdiction and staff over that. We don't actually have a recommendation on this report. So is this a new format we're using now?
There was an oral recommendation.
Right. The resolution and the tables in the resolution are just...
Economizing on something here?
No, these resolutions are just for show. We don't really know what to put in the resolution.
There used to be actually information presented in a way that, for the most part, I appreciate zooming in on. And at the end, something that made clear what it was that the general manager was asking for. I'm just wondering, is this a new approach for some reason?
Well, I think if I may, and then Mrs. Banff, I think what we're being presented with here is a series of options for us to commit $2.7 million. You know, the obvious choice here is to look in item number two and see if there's $2.7 million that we wish to spend from the obvious surplus that is projected. Now, I think beyond that, the chief financial officer is saying to us that if you wish to accommodate more of these enhancements, you're going to have to find $6.9 million. And yeah, I understand the point that you're making, but I think in this particular case, this is pretty obvious. And I don't know whether, Mr. Tanguy, you wish to make some recommendations on the $2.7 million of these from this list.
We actually...
Yes, you're next to be speaking, Mrs. Bennett, if you would just be patient.
Well,
I'm the chairman of the committee. Mr. Tanguy could have given us some suggestions on how to spend $2.7 million, but to find the $6.9 million is something very different.
And we have made a recommendation. The recommendation was to hold in reserve for these risks that we've identified, these risks that are becoming clearer. I wish I could tell you exactly what the electricity costs will be for the authority in FY07. We've taken a stab at that. That's included in our budget, a budget we've had long conversations with and public briefings on, repeat discussions with the board, but those are changing right now. We're continuing to negotiate with our unions. Those numbers are changing right now. And we also have discussed with the board the issues with workers' comp liability. We are trying very hard to meet the jurisdictional requirement that we live within the subsidy proposed and acted on by the various different jurisdictional bodies. And we're also recognizing the priorities that the board has established for policy initiatives. And in this discussion today, what we're proposing is to keep the $2.7 million to use towards our risk factors and work with the board to establish some priority for the policy initiatives. If the costs aren't as concerning as we are afraid they might be, if our revenue continues to increase, or if their revenue's in excess of our projections, then we'll have some guidance going forward to manage these discussions on how we would spend any additional revenue, so we don't get into the conversation at the end of the year of whether it's surplus or not. That's our feeling, and that's what we're trying to present here. I'm not sure how a PowerPoint presentation would have made that clearer, but I'll try to work on doing it.
Mr. Chairman, my point was that the information is being presented in a way that I think complicated things are harder than what it is we're doing. Although something that by its nature is full of a lot of detail, I prefer a clearer presentation. In any case, it's apparent that what we're doing with the motion before us is deciding not to do policy initiatives. It isn't clear to me even from that exactly what the mechanism of time frame is by which we decide whether we are doing any of the bus priorities, not to mention the additional rail service that I think is really needed. And then the other item is the living wage, which frankly, if we adopt a budget that I know we're going to wind up doing improvements for compensation for most of the 10,000 people who work here, and the people who basically make the least get nothing in a $1 billion budget, that will not be an acceptable budget to me.
This is bad.
Is there anyone else you want to let speak with us? Well, all right. What I want to say is that I cannot support the motion, and I cannot support it because it does not address these policy initiatives that are in number two here. These initiatives have been on the table, excuse me, Ever since the budget was presented back in December, many of them are important bus improvements that are needed, that have been needed. We've talked about bus overcrowding relief. I can't imagine that we would not, in finding the ability to adjust our budget, I can't imagine that we would just set aside these improvements to provide funding for issues that have come on the table after we identified these requirements. Sure, these contingencies are here, but there are always going to be contingencies. And if we allow our contingencies to come in and jump over priorities that we have already identified that we said we were interested in, there's no way I can support that. Now, the other question I have is in 2B, 5, and 6, we have $1 million for holiday service, and we have $2.2 million for rail off-peak service. Does that mean that that doesn't happen either? And haven't we identified the revenue that would come from those changes, and is that revenue anywhere?
Yeah, we have identified the revenue associated with the holiday service. The rail service off-peak non-seasonal doesn't have a revenue component with it. It's really just providing additional service for the people. There's no identified revenue component. What we're simply putting before the board here is an opportunity, perhaps through amending a motion, to establish some priority, next priorities for us as we move forward in the operations of the agency, and if resources become available, if, as we said, these risks, which we've identified from the beginning of the budget process, there's no new risk here. There's nothing surprising in the way of risk here. These have been identified, actually, and some of them were identified before the service level improvements were identified. This would give us an opportunity to have some guidance going forward what the next investment, should resources become available, are.
My question is, if we have revenue that comes from the holiday service, and we don't do the holiday service, we don't get the revenue, right?
Right.
And the holiday service is not funded in what I'm hearing put before us. So that's kind of a little conundrum, I guess.
We haven't put the revenue in the budget either. If you approve that item, we'll pick up $800,000 in revenue, and we'll increase the expenditures 1.8. Neither are in revenue nor expenditure until you approve this.
So what does this say here, this $1 million for holiday service?
That would be the net subsidy.
Net, yes.
Yeah, but if it brings $800,000, then it only costs $200,000, right?
No, it costs $1.8 million.
It costs $1.8.
Yes, okay. Ma'am.
So you would put in... Okay, you need $1 million if you do that. Well, I can't support this recommendation as it is on the table, making the 2.7 go for the budget risk that are at the bottom of the page.
With Mr. Ewell.
Well, I second the motion just for so we can have discussion on it. It's certainly a very positive discussion, but I think what we all need to understand and appreciate is that we don't. We got to do something, and something is, you know, if we want to do all these policy initiatives, then we got to either identify additional new revenues and or increase subsidies for our jurisdictions. And I can tell you, we're not going to buy increasing subsidies. So, and again, these budget risks are called budget drivers, or, you know, CEO has said, have always been on the table, but the fact that remains is that, you know, we're experiencing increases. So it behooves us to prioritize. That's not to say any of us are not committed to policy initiatives to make these changes, but we're just not sitting around with a bunch of excess cash or surplus funds that we can just say, okay, well, let's just take them all here. Yeah.
Mr. Coffin.
Couple things. I understand the spirit of Mr. Smith's motion, given the difficult financial situations to face all our budgets. But also looking at the list of his budget commitments, one of the things that I think needs to be on there recognized is fair transit service and possible changes may be necessary there. I heard staff make a suggestion, and I don't know how amenable a maker of the motion as I think recent changes in the innovation of Nevada highlight in terms of recognizing our service area, bus service, rail service, paratransit service. Two of the items that are under policy initiatives, bus service, routing, that is key, but frankly, with my Virginia Railway Express hat on, much ridership flow there, taking for granted 16%. And now there's a 5% increase we're experiencing with every lipstick here at Metro, seeing a 5% drop. If you get that overcrowding, so the bus overcrowding, I think, is should be treated as a priority as we look at how additional dollars might be applied. The other thing, the rail service is presented in the item on, I have my Roman numerals down right, 6. Rail service off-peak non-seasonal. That's a different way of saying rail service crowded. As the folks have done what we asked them to do, is flatten out that rush hour, and now they're finding crowded trains. So that's a convoluted way, which is meant to say, we'd be willing to accept as a friendly amendment to your motion that to have a better handle on these budget risks, which I would add to their transit, that get bus overcrowding, rail service crowding as a priority.
Well, Mayor's response question. Mr. Kaufman, are you suggesting that within the context of the motion for the budget that there be a codicil that the board adopts the following priorities, A, B, C, D? Or are you suggesting that those items need to be absorbed into the funding of the budget as it's currently presented?
I'm suggesting that as we
because the numbers I'm perfectly willing.
To Gladys's mind.
Well, let me say
I've got too many guys.
Can I lay out what my flexibility would be on it?
Certainly, Mr.
I think that the number at hand where there is flexibility is 2.7. To the extent that any service levels that we would adopt add up to 2.7, and that we would then sort of say that we are hoping for positive adjustments in revenue during the budget that we'd be able to address the various risk factors with. So to the extent that any of those service levels would add to 2.7, I'd certainly be willing to accept those and establish those as part of the budget and deal with the risk as revenue allows during the year or as we have to respond to at that time. But beyond 2.7, we effectively bust the bottom line, and at that point I would only ask what would your solution be for the revenue to balance out that expense.
Within the envelope of 2.7, applying that for those two priorities, I think I hear you saying, spirit of boldly making sausage in front of the world, I think that makes good sense. That's what I'm trying to say.
So can we identify, for instance, bus overcrowding relief, I'm perfectly willing to make part of my motion. That's at 1.5 million. That would allow us 1.2 million in abeyance, if my math is correct, right?
Would you?
And then that leaves out of that list, then, the only thing that really fits into that category is the holiday services at 1.0.
Or, if I may make a suggestion,
yes.
if we had the bus overcrowding relief at 1.4, and we picked up the living wage
It's not 1.4.
It's not 1.4.
Well, we can say it's 1.4.
1.4.
That's all we're spending. That's what we're saying. That's it.
I mean, that's right. It doesn't have a place. It's not like it's an item.
Right.
No, but there's a, reality is, though, there's a number of events associated with that that have been duly estimated by staff to create the $1.5 million. Yes, they may be right, they may be wrong, but based on their experience, we've got a $1.5 million.
Mr. Smith, I think there's $100,000 in this budget somewhere. And I think the two things that I would like to see prioritized and put into the budget is the overcrowding relief for buses and the living wage requirement. And that totals 2.8, which is close enough for government for a couple.
Why don't you just throw us off the question?
Now, who is next? Wait a minute.
No, but I was going to queue up.
There's a lineup here of some kind. But Mr. Tanguy,
may I clarify how you might arrive at slightly different numbers than those presented? If you look in the notes next to the adjustment, some of these services are for a partial year. So if the bus overcrowding relief it's roughly $500,000 per quarter. So that would be another way you can move these numbers around and help us establish priorities of how we would implement them. Do we implement them as a three-quarter year? Do we implement them half year? Do we implement them a quarter year?
Now we're going to do Mr. Kaufman, Mrs. Mack, Mr. Zimmerman.
Again, in trying to cobble, my biggest concern is here the rail bus overcrowding. I'm also interested in the rail service off-peak on seasonal. The question I have is, I won't assume I'm 6'7". So help me understand within the rail service 2.2, is that an all or nothing number? Is there some improvement of flattening, of recognizing that getting crowding not at just that peak hour? Does that 2.2 have any gradients to it, or is it just too different?
I think the 2.2 is to get the off-peak non-seasonal service up to a certain level for the full year. So a different number was given to us. We could improve off-peak non-seasonal service by some amount.
Because I don't know what other placeholder might be put in there to realize a true improvement, not just money cast in the direction of something. I don't know whether Steve might do it.
The off-peak right now, seasonal, summer versus winter, in our budget, we want extra longer change for 6 months. This $2.2 million would make that 6 months to run. So if you wanted to make it 6-8, it would be 2/3 of it. And you know, there's a way to do that. We do it for 6 weeks versus 8 weeks. We could substitute that for more incremental numbers. So we pick the number and come close enough to it, but that's where it came from. We're increasing it from 6 months to 9 months. So only 100,000 we would do it for 6 to 7 weeks.
I guess, besides the time frame for implementation, is there any partially pregnant opportunity here?
I don't think so. We've looked at all the lines to see whether we can do it on certain lines versus other lines. And our ridership in the evening and in the off-peak is such east of the downtown that it affects all the area. So my recommendation, I'd go back and revisit that, but my recommendation being put on the spot is that we deal with the time issue and not deal with the line issue. Because I have an exact answer at the moment.
But if we did it time and later found a level of flexibility.
Gave me a number, I would come back with a specific recommendation combining two before October or before that, but before we would have to implement.
I was looking at a 1.5 for plus and a 1.2 gives us 2.7. So I would propose that as a substitute amendment, the same item that Mr. Smith brought forward, then though to apply the 2.7 toward the bus overcrowding 1.5 and rail service at 1.2.
I'll absorb that into my motion.
Okay.
With Mr. Yule, will you
so
go along with that?
What you're doing is no longer finding.
Well, you're going to absorb it with the consent of the body. Okay. absorb is not quite the phrase.
Okay.
You would accept it as a friendly amendment with the consent of the
That's
body,
fine.
And I will object.
You will object.
So if you wish to have a new amendment, you may have a new amendment and we can just speak.
Okay, well, why don't we do this condition call and move that as an amendment to my motion?
Move that as an amendment.
Okay, so we have.
I second.
We have an amendment to the motion.
Discussion
on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment, Mr. Zimmerman.
I think this discussion is going to look pretty silly in a larger context. I go back to Mr. Kaufman's original remarks that sort of seem to have led to this proposal. I think he made the right point. So we have, first of all, we have people right now who are pouring money into this system because they're using it at higher rates. You know, we didn't hear this week, but we heard other weeks, you know, what's happening with revenues because we've had tremendous ridership. And Mr. Kaufman's caution is a really important one. And, you know, what we're seeing at VRE is frightening, considering that we had this tremendous demand surging, and all of a sudden, it's turning the wrong way. And it's because we hit that limit. We can't get rail cars, we can't get ourselves on the track, we have all these problems, these constraints. And now people start to say, okay, the heck with it. Now, we have these nice little buttons that everybody got and the general manager is wearing. And, you know, I don't know how many people here this morning took the bus in. But I got to tell you, the bus that I got on was standing room only to the door at my bus stop, which is halfway in Columbia Pike. People by the end were, you know, crammed into the doorways and everything else. Now, that's one bus, and I don't know if that's the experience generally. But here we are encouraging people to do this for all kinds of good reasons. And we're talking about these things that, again, I think Mr. Kaufman had exactly right. These aren't, you know, like new, neat things we'd like to do kind of stuff. These aren't frills. This is actually providing increased capacity at a time when we have increased demand, which in fact is raising the fare box and raising the share that is being paid for by the ridership. The total amount of all we got in front of us is a blip in a $500 million operating budget. And I do not understand how the heck it is. I'm sorry, $1 billion operating budget, but $500 million on funding. Subtract revenue. In any case, any way you measure it, it's tiny. And it's error of estimate level. And we have all this revenue that wasn't anticipated is coming through. And here we are fussing over, you know, frankly, this is wholly inadequate if you do all of it. The region needs a much higher level of transit service right now. That's what it needs. We should be pouring money into it because of the situation we have in front of our face all over this region. It is nuts that we are fussing over 1.5 million of bus overcrowding relief or 2.2 million of rail service when you've got on crowded trains off peak now and people are waiting too long, which discourages many of them from using it. This is nuts. You should, in fact, be saying, yes, we have to subsidize it more. And no, we're not going to do that. But I don't believe anything in here requires us to change the subsidy. If, you know, if we don't do this stuff, we hold it, we're going to be hearing, you know, proposals all throughout the year to spend that additional revenue. One thing or another, whatever they've decided to do, which might be on this list or might be something else or whatever, they'll be doing other things. But we need the additional service right now. This is a very small step. It represents to me the minimal we ought to be doing in any budget that we're going to approve.
Mrs. Mack?
Well, I just want to underscore what has been said by Mr. Zimmerman and by Mr. Kaufman. I think if we look at what at the $9.7 million, the four estimates there that I think are the only responsible choices we can make are the bus overcrowding, the holiday service, because after all, that's dealing with overcrowding on the holidays, and the 2.2 for the rail service overcrowding. That, interestingly enough, comes to $4.7 million. That's three items. The fourth item that I think we ought to add is the living wage. That's $1.3 million. I cannot believe that in a billion-dollar budget, we would not take the responsible action to have a living wage for, I don't know how many people this is, but we sit here and if you know, diesel fuel goes up 20 cents a gallon, we pay it. If electricity goes up, whatever, we pay it. and we will not make a responsible decision to spend $1 million to make sure that the people that we contract with in this agency have a living wage. Everybody who works for this agency, we're sure they have a living wage. But the people that we contract for, we all, I think in our jurisdictions, we already have living wages for those contractors we do. I'm very proud of the district that just recently, Mr. Graham, passed a living wage of $11.75 an hour. And here we are, we're being funded by all these jurisdictions who have a living wage policy, and we don't have one for ourselves. I mean, I just think that's a terrible contradiction that we ought to fix. Back to the $4.7 million for overcrowding, it's already been said. I mean, we are raking in the dollars because people are taking transit. And we're saying to them, okay, we want you to come in more and more numbers, and what we'll do is just pack you in as tight as we can, and I guess when we get so we can't fit anybody else on, we'll just leave them standing on the platforms and leave them standing at the bus stops. And we're talking $4.7 million. I mean, you know, at the end of the year when we do the reconciliation, we'll be talking about a lot more money than that, I'll bet you. And again, I mean, going back to the analogy of the gasoline, and I mean the diesel fuel and the electricity and also the gasoline, if that goes up by 10, 15, 20 cents, we're going to put that on the table. We'll have to find a way to do it. We need to be responsible enough to find a way to relieve this from the crowd.
Thank you. Mr. Solomon.
Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Isn't there a 1% contingency in this budget?
Yes, there is.
Approximately 10 million. I heard you say there may be a 10 million hit on these risk factors, but all of those still kind of nebulous concept. But we do know there's a 1% contingency.
Right.
I mean, even that contingency could address some of the concerns that this MAC had. I mean, it's a living wage. Ever since I've been on this board, we've been talking about a living wage policy and really haven't done anything to fund it yet. So I see this as an opportunity to get it done. I understand what Kaufman said. I agree with him. But at the end of the day, this is a small amount that we can find some money. I mean, we were talking about uncommitted funds in CIP on today, and I don't think it would be a stretch to say we want to fund all of these things, and then we can find the money at the appropriate time, even if it comes out of contingency.
And I think that's essentially, at one level, our proposal. We're seeking some sense of priority from the board, recognizing that this is the amount, 461. The amount that's been identified with the jurisdictions, and we're trying to avoid breaking faith with the jurisdictions about that amount. We've tried very hard to accommodate these additional policy initiatives that were after the budget was developed. What we're simply recognizing is that if ridership trends increase and if they even go higher, which with gas prices continuing up, there's no reason to assume they aren't. We didn't want to use overly aggressive revenue assumptions either. Simply seeking some policy guidance from the board, well, what would the next thing that we would fund if we find ourselves in the happy circumstances that these risk factors don't overwhelm us and our revenue continues to increase. As we go forward with what we think is a more transparent process in which we provide you monthly and quarterly updates on what our revenues are, what our actual expenditures are, the board can then at any point exercise their judgment to activate any of these proposals which have already been vetted and approved by the board. That's what we're trying to do here, is try to give you some sense, try to get some sense for us what those priorities are. That's part of the broader capital discussion that we had had earlier, that a policy should include some sense of priority so the staff feels that they know what direction to head. So as we move forward, the resources are available, and then start activating those things that the board has established as a priority. I'd also say the next thing that the staff really owes you is some list of reverse priorities. If revenues begin to degrade, if ridership goes down for any reason, that's happened in the past too. If some of these expenses are even higher than what we're afraid of, we should have a clear list of priorities that we've worked with the board to establish how we would reduce back to keep within.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, for several years, I'm sure that the words living wage will play very well in tomorrow's newspaper. However, I don't think it's something that's been studied
in enough detail at this organization or has an understanding around the table as far as how it ends up being applied. And I would just ask staff, have we looked at the living wage and how it broadly applies to our contracts or subcontractors at this agency?
Yes, sir.
We have. We have a contract with a prison that redoes our upholstery work on all our. Would the living wage apply to the rates that we paid to the prison?
It was not on the list.
What do you mean it was not on the list?
We have a list of existing contracts, and contractors inform us what the wage rates are on the contract. That prison contract was not on the list that made up the $1.3 million cost estimate in the budget.
So is there a resolution on the living wage floating around this room somewhere that excludes that group in some way? I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying we don't know what this living wage, we talk about living wage, and nobody at this table knows what it's being applied to necessarily.
The reason we didn't give the specifics on contract by contract is there was proprietary information that the contractors did not want released in the public domain, but certainly we could make it available privately.
So we've passed a living wage for our subcontractors, but the prison that does our upholstery would definitely not be included in that, but we don't have that on the table anywhere.
I don't think that's on the list.
Because as I understand it, it would increase the wage rates at the prison from 80 cents to $11 an hour.
You just understood that it would happen.
Well, I don't understand that very clearly because, you know, Mr. Zimmerman, I don't have a piece of paper that tells me what living wage is on this table. I have nine people around the table who all may have a different interpretation of what living wage is and who it applies to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman?
I'd just say, when we asked and the board directed that the policy be put together, that was done last year after about a year's discussion, and a specific approach was developed and costed out. Now, you know, I think anybody wants to know exactly what it applies to and all that. I mean, personally, I think I looked at that about 8 or 9 months ago, being somewhat familiar with the issue. I have a pretty good idea of exactly what it does. I can understand maybe all folks just don't. The opportunity is certainly there and has been there if you really want to know exactly what it applies to.
I just want to
fair question, but I think that's all been done. We know what it is, we know what it costs, and we know we're basically talking about a particular set of employees. We know who they are too, and we know that they're the lowest paid people who work for this agency. And I don't think it's in the agency's interest to leave them behind. I don't think it's the right thing to do. And, you know, again, considering the amount that we are going to be putting into improving the wages and benefits of everybody from the interim general manager, people who, you know, operate buses and do everything else, which, you know, fine, that's what we have to do. And consider that, how tiny this is for people who work for the agency indirectly, who provide the services that our customers expect. I can't believe that.
I think the number is grossly misrepresented, Mr. Zimmerman.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? On the amendment. Hearing none. Do you remember what the amendment is?
The amendment didn't do it, Ms. Knapp.
That's right, it didn't, so I'm voting again.
Further discussion on the amendment, hearing none. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The nays have it, the amendment is defeated. We're now on the original motion. Are there further amendments to the original motion? Are you prepared for, Mr. Zimmerman has an amendment?
I'd like to substitute the original recommendation that the interim general manager brought apparently to this meeting, which is the bottom line on the table.
Could you just say that one more time?
I'm moving the general manager's recommendation at the start of this meeting,
which is the 467.9.
Right.
The 467.9. Recognizing that there's a shortfall here of 6.9.
And direct the staff to come back with a recommendation next week, which I imagine I can.
How to handle the shortfall. Does everybody understand the amendment?
Well, it's not an amendment, it's a substitute. Amendment in the nature of a substitute.
Okay, does everyone understand the amendment in the nature of a substitute?
Discussion on the proposal.
Discussion.
I have to say that it's a threshold issue for us, and that it's going to be, we'll have to deal with the controversy associated with it, but both of the voting members from Maryland intend to vote no. Thank you.
Further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment in the nature of a substitute, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I wish to change my vote.
Oh, recording. You can't change.
It's next week you have to worry about it.
We're going to ask for a recording.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Because the ayes have it. The amendment by the nature of a substitute is passed. Now we're on the motion as amended, as substituted. Further discussion? Further discussion?
Mr. Smith? Yeah, I would certainly like the minutes to reflect that Mr. Deegan and I voted no in the minutes as opposed to the voice vote.
Yes, I'd let the minutes reflect that Mr. Deegan and Mr. Smith voted no. Further discussion, hearing none. All those in favor of the motion as amended, as substituted, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
No. So the minutes will again reflect that Mr. Smith and Mr. Deegan voted no. And that the motion passes. We return to you, Mr. Wood, Mr. Harcum.
This next item is seeking your approval for reference to the board, the FY07 through 2012 capital improvement program. The good news is here.
You know, before you do that, let me just make this clarification. It needs to be clearly understood that this motion required staff to return, was it to return to the board, did you say, Mr. Zimmerman? So that when this comes before the board, there would be some presentation as to how to accommodate the 6.9
yes,
million, just so that's clear.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now we'll proceed, Mr. Harper.
Item 3B is to request your approval to refer to the board the FY 2007 to 2012 CIP. This document, let me just touch on some bullets real quick. Make note in here that the CIP now has an assumption of $104 million instead of the $206 million in federal funding for the Metro Matters rail cars. FTA tentative estimates are what's displayed here in terms of the cash flow. We are making a minor change to the Largo project at the request of MDOT to add $650,000 to that particular project for litigation support and some real estate condemnations. And Arlington County is requesting certain changes to their jurisdictional projects. And in the extension of the yellow line, there is some upfront capital costs, which will be fully funded by the District of Columbia. Other than that, the 2007-2012 CIP is completely in accordance with what was mailed out for the annual work plan. It's completely in accordance with the Metro Matters program. There are no changes. It's just status quo, same as it's always been. That's my report.
Is there discussion? Is there a motion?
Are we in this?
We are in number two, approve the FY 2007.
This is 2B to approve the 07 to 2012 CIP.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
The move and second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. That is approved. The third action item is we approve the use of uncommitted CIP funds. Mr. Harker.
Yes, sir. This is the presentation that began some discussion this morning about prioritization of capital programs. We do have a PowerPoint presentation to walk you through. What I would propose is let me get through a couple of pages here to kind of establish the budgetary framework and then turn that over. I'm sure there might be questions about individual projects and a continuation of the policy discussion. On page one, we have identified to date roughly $100 million of uncommitted capital funds. That should not be the headline tomorrow. This is simply the process of going through the CIP, annually scrubbing projects that are under budget, projects that are slower than budget, those kind of things. At the last meeting, we identified Section A, which was from FY05, $38.9 million of those funds had not yet been committed or obligated. In addition to that, back in December, staff made a presentation to the board requesting a reprogramming action to add funding to the project for the Carmen Turner facility build-out. And at that time, there was an additional $9.7 million of unobligated CIP funding that was identified. In addition to that, there has been construction litigation that has been resolved, and that would generate $40.3 million of capital funding available to the authority. Some total $100 million of uncommitted funding at this moment in time. If we flip the page, what we've done is go back to 05, as we said, and we went project by project by project and identified the projects that actually came in under budget versus those projects that have just been slowly delayed. We're requesting reauthorization or recommitment to those projects for $15.7 million to get them to completion, get them off the books. The next page identifies project by project what those are. I'd be happy to take questions on the projects in a few minutes. The next issue was the Carmen Turner facility. As I said, there was an original budget of $10 million. Staff's requesting an additional 12. We can discuss the project itself in a moment. The thing I do want to draw your attention to is item C, which is $30 million of new projects. And if you flip in a couple of pages to, I believe, page 6, these are projects that have not been included in the capital improvement program before. They are projects ready to go. We believe they're high-value projects. There's one that we must take action on, and that's the third item down, repair the greenbelt lifts. That's a safety issue right now. There have been structural failures identified in the lifts out of that facility, and we're taking action to repair those lifts. So at a minimum, we suggest that that item be approved as part of this initiative. But above and beyond that, there's relatively small dollar projects here that have some high visibility and high advantage. The first one is the first phase of the AFTA recommendations, which would be to begin making improvements to some of our bus facilities, which for years have been neglected. Some of the working conditions that our Metrobus employees live in are not pleasant. The next item down is a rail car wash. This proposal would kind of rehab and turn back on 2 out of our 6 rail car washes. Currently, the rail car wash facilities are not operational, and the fleet is getting dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. This would get 2 up and running right away, and later on there's a proposal to do the remaining 4. The $2.5 million time and attendance recording system, this is kind of an add-on to the existing IT program that's going on. This would allow us to control payroll costs, in particular overtime costs, at the front end rather than have to deal with it at the back end. So we think there might be some huge improvements to management's ability to control payroll. The $2.5 million for the Fort Totten Police Station is in addition to that existing budget. It's a combination of inflation and additional requirements in the facility itself. There's a request for $2.4 million for a police firing range. This is an interesting project in that we believe it will actually pay for itself. As I understand it, our police currently use other jurisdictions' firing ranges to qualify new recruits and to qualify existing police officers, FBI, Quantico, those kind of places. And the Metro Transit police are being bumped to the most disadvantageous time frames. So our police are actually out at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning at those ranges trying to stay qualified. Staff has identified a location where we could build a Metro police firing range. Once it's operational, we would reduce overtime in the operating budget to the tune of about $300,000 a year forever, and the firing range has the potential to become a revenue generator for us because we could rent the facility out to other police departments. So this particular project, while it has an upfront cost, we believe it will pay for itself within 4 or 5 years. The bus ITS investments are to install the automatic passenger counting system. There was some discussion about what that was. We've got a number of buses with APCs already on. New buses coming in have APCs as part of the design. This would be finally to get us to the point where the computer system is installed and we can start using that data, manipulating that data, doing better analysis. The next item, ITRP support, that's the Microsoft standard. This would finally, once and for all, get WMATA away from the products that we're using now and bring us in line with kind of the Microsoft business environment of PC-based software. The next item, accept credit cards. This is a really big one here. This would finally allow us to take Visa cards, MasterCards, credit cards in the parking lots. You would not have to have a smart card to exit Metro Rail parking lots. The next item down is to put in place the system signage, improved signage, also identify, as we just said, we're now accepting credit cards in the parking lots. The next item down, services to improve CIP budget process. As we've gotten deeper into a review of the CIP, the challenges of me being able to bring you information in a timely fashion, in a meaningful fashion, it's difficult. And we're requesting consulting services to come in here and help us look at the entire capital process, everything from staffing and organizational levels to computer systems to how this whole capital budget has been put together. The next item is a minor amount of money to begin replacing and rehabilitating bicycle racks throughout the system. They've been neglected in the capital program for many years. And the last item is a pilot program to install two outdoor heaters at rail stations and gauge customer satisfaction or customer appreciation for those heaters. This would generate $30 million of obligations or expenditures in the capital program. And if we flip the page, what I want to draw your attention to on the left is kind of the tally sheet of where we are. Identified $100 million of funding that's not committed or available right now. We want to take $15.7 million of those 05 projects and just run them to completion and get them done, get them off the books. $22 million for the Carmen Turner facility, $30 million I just talked about. That would use up $68 million, leaving an uncommitted balance of $32.9 million of capital funds. This goes to the staff's request for a prioritization process to help us decide what to do in these kind of situations. On the right side, I want to highlight that while we've got $30 billion of projects ready to go right now, we have kind of a first-tier, second-tier set of projects almost ready to go. And very soon, we would be coming back to you requesting the first tier be authorized. The escalator canopy, it's a to-be-determined number. It's rough order of magnitude $20 million right now, so that 36 could jump to 56 very quickly. The next level of priorities is an additional $32 million. Sitting right there is $68 million of CIP requests that we know are in the pipeline and are coming to you, but we only have $32 million of funding available. And again, just as a reminder, inside Metro Matters, the assumption was $260 million of federal funding for those rail cars. Only $104 million is going to be available, so there was a current shortfall in the Metro Matters program of $156. So the short version here, the wrap-up version, is staff's identified at this point $32.9 million of uncommitted CIP funding, but we know that there is an upcoming $68 million request and there is the funding problem for the rail cars. And so what this action item is doing is requesting your approval to move forward on the three requested uses of funds, the 05 completion, the Carmen Turner project, and the new $30 million worth of projects.
Thank you. I'm going to, because you know sometimes we have to do this, can we just have a motion so that we'll be discussing the motion? Just pro forma motion to approve the recommendation. I move approval. It's been moved. Is there a second? Second. We're now discussing the motion. Is there discussion on the motion, Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have difficulty supporting the motion as stated because I don't understand why, when we're short $104 million in federal funding that was anticipated, and we have no reason to believe that we're ever going to see that money unless you can bring somebody from our government affairs office to the table that says that we might, or give me some reason that we're going to see it, why we wouldn't deal with a like number of $100 million to backfall that amount to cover the Metro Rail cars. I mean, there comes a point in time, I understand, where we don't want to play our whole hand with the federal, with the Congress, and we still anticipate or hope that we might get money, but have we come to a point where we really have no chance of seeing that $104 million that we need? And then in that case, why aren't we substituting the $100 million for that?
I think I have an answer to that. I've got the Metro Matters for Dummies book, and it specifically says that if there is a shortfall in federal funding for those rail cars, WMATA is to issue debt. It's a very clearly delineated instruction set in this document. That is what we have been told to go do.
So that gets back to the previous question earlier in the day of the $13 million debt that Mr. Graham was asking about, that we shouldn't readily go spend somewhere. We're going to be issuing it pretty quickly, I think. unless somebody else is elected to Congress, it's going to take up our cause.
Before, if you want Debbie to speak to the prospects, the federal funding prospects, I would point out that it's not $104 million.
It's $156.
It's $156.
My staff just corrected me on that.
Right, thing. Okay.
You wish to speak to the federal prospect?
I always hate to try to project what Congress is going to do
sure.
or not do, but...
It's an unenviable job.
It is. When we were putting together Metro Matters, it was at the same point that the surface transportation bill was being considered by Congress. And and we managed to get into that bill the equivalent of an authorization for $104 million for 52 rail cars and associated facilities. So we are in the process of working through with FTA, securing the commitment from the federal government over 3 years for that $104 million. Under any existing authorization that the Congress has already provided, that we aren't, I mean, that we're not going to get the remainder of the 156. Now, there's always, you know, could be, you know, the Mr. Davis's bill or other legislation that came forward in the future that, or, you know, a future surface transportation bill that provided an authorization for the money, we would still have to go forward to get federal appropriations. But there's nothing on the horizon right now that provides any prospect of getting the remaining 156 million.
Well, I understand, and there comes a time where you really have to fish and cut bait for cut bait here. And the question is, how we're like 2 years into Metro Matters at this point, or are we three? Two years in out of six. I mean, you know, how far do we go down the trail before we just realize that the road to Oz is another way, and that Congress isn't coming with the money? So at that point, I mean, we're sitting here, we're looking, we've got, I know we have needs, and we have things that we wish to do. I mean, you know, I'd like to buy a new lawnmower, but I don't have that money this week, so I'm not buying a new lawnmower. So I've got to do it in another building somewhere, I guess. We're not going to find more revenue, so why, when we have this amount of money, don't we feel that the shortfall on rail cars is so important that we would put that money toward rail cars?
But can I start by saying that some of these things, I mean, I wish some of these were just wishes, but repairing the Greenbelt lifts are actually absolutely necessary to get the rail cars. And in fact, we've already, because it was an emergent situation, we've already used existing board authority to go ahead and repair the Greenbelt lifts.
Well, you know, if I could just interrupt for a minute. Okay, understand there may be some things in here that are imperative. But I got to tell you, when you package them with something that says outdoor heaters at a rail station, you're getting to lose me here. Somebody said to me earlier this morning, it's kind of like when you were a kid and you left the door open and your dad said, gee, do you think we're heating the hall outside? Well, you know, there's something to that. I mean, why would we be, and we got electric bill problems, why would we be putting electric heaters outdoors at a rail station? I mean, people have come, people in Chicago and other places stand on rail platforms in the snow. Certainly in Washington, we can handle it.
I understand, and that's the last one on the list, but it was based on a customer request, information we've received from folks that's something that they'd like to see, and we were just suggesting that we pilot two stations.
It's cheaper to hand them out hand models, probably,
as they come into
the station.
It can simply be removed. I think if you...
Well, Pat, can you put together a package of items that are imperative out of here, and then deal with the notion of the rail cars too and backfill some of that money. I mean, you know, when there's something like that on the list, it just tells me we came up with a list to spend the money we have. And I realize you're not trying to do that, okay? But what is absolutely essential? And then after that, what's essential is funding those rail cars that we're playing with monopoly money on right now.
And our attempt here was to do a combination of absolutely essential items, the bus facilities. This is just the first phase one of the AFTA PURE recommendations. These were improvements that weren't identified in the Metro Matters program because we hadn't had the AFTA PURE review. If you remember the PURE review, one of the statements was that, you know, given the facilities we provide people, it's surprising we get as much bus service as we do out of it. This is not the full AFTA PURE review recommendations. This is just the first step to make the basic quality of life improvements to those facilities. The rail car wash facilities, we essentially have no rail car wash facilities right now because none of the rail car wash facilities, I don't want to say none, but for the most part, the rail car wash facilities aren't in compliance with discharge requirements. And so that's a basic core service issue associated with the quality of the service we're providing. The repair the Greenbelt lifts is simply necessary to maintain those cars that we're already getting. It's an improvement we had to make. It's just an emergency improvement. Common Intense Recording System Replacement. We heard the message from the board.
about overtime, about controlling our personnel expenses. It's 75% of our operating subsidy, actually more than 75% of our operating costs. It probably should have been further up on the priority list of ITRP, but I didn't develop that list. This, I think, is an incredibly important issue. Fort Taunton Police Station is actually a program that's underway and needs to be completed. Firing range is one that we thought, since it could make money, it could actually reduce the cost of overtime, it could actually be an opportunity to generate savings into the program. The kind of savings I'm going to need to find for 07, based on the last resolution. As you come down the list, if there are any questions about any one of them, that's frankly why we have it here, is to try to get some sense of interest and priority from the board so we can move forward on it, recognizing that we need those rail cars. I'm not saying we don't, but when Metro Matters was developed and that $156 million shortfall was developed, we didn't anticipate some of these changes, and this is going to be fluid, and our priorities may in fact change.
Well, I think what it underscores, along with the previous discussion, is that there are a plethora of needs that cannot be met, as it seems, or some of them may be construed by some to be desires versus needs. But in that context, in the context of the fact that we've got ridership overwhelming the system on several fronts, that the notion from a business perspective or a business plan of increasing fares to manage that flow of increased ridership and gain additional revenues to back up the budget, it's just common sense. It's a supply and demand issue and driver that would drive you to consider increasing fares. And now, once again, we've dropped into, is it 2 years without a fare increase? Yes. So we've gone 2 years. You know, that last time we went 8 years, and then when we did one, people thought there would never be another one, I suppose, and went crazy over it. We've got to get into some regular pattern of fares that are structured relative to the increase in demand of the system, because the system is finite and it can't continue to absorb it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mrs. Mack, and then Mr. Zinner and Mr. Crawford.
I want to, in a sense, have the same type of discussion that Mrs. Smith is having. I think what we're doing here in making these recommendations is segmenting out our capital needs and dealing with them piece by piece rather than dealing with them comprehensively. Anything that is on this list that has to do with Metro Matters, it seems to me, should be identified as substitutions or should be funded by whatever is available in Metro Matters. Now, Rick says that, you know, there's a firm commitment in Metro Matters that anything that we overshoot, we issue debt for it. Well, I think if we went back to the jurisdictions and said, hey, you don't have to issue quite as much debt as we told you you absolutely had to issue or this thing would fall apart, I don't think they would be sad about that. I think they might be happy to say, hey, you got to issue $50 million less debt than we thought you had to issue in the first place. I also think that, speaking to the general manager's point, there are things on here that we really need to do. And I think that on those, we ought to go forward on them. One of my favorite projects is the canopies, and actually I don't see any estimate here for the canopies. And so it leads me to ask, is there another way to fund them, or why aren't they here?
The estimate was order of magnitude $20 million. We hadn't settled down on a precise number, so I didn't want to put a number in public on a document that I might have to back up later and say it's wrong, but order of magnitude $20 million.
But these numbers add up to $68 million, so you're saying there's another kind of $20 million
yes,
that ought to go in here that's not here?
Mm-hmm.
And where does that fall in the priority?
That's why staff is requesting a prioritization process, that, you know, that's how the day began.
Well, it's a 68 plus 20 priority.
Mm-hmm.
I just think we need a better and more comprehensive look, and I also think that we need to take Metro Matters, determine the extent to which there were there were needs related to Metro Matters identified after Metro Matters that we can fund with any release expenses for Metro Matters. I think we're missing, we're still piping these various pots of capital money, and I don't think we have.
Just as a suggestion, with the exception of the greenbelt lifts, there's no demand that this be done right this minute. We could do some, all, none of these right now. As staff, we've been trying to move into this capital reporting process in a stepwise fashion. I'd prefer to give you the whole universal picture all at once, but it's going to take so long, we keep staying in the dark on what's going on. So last month, we closed out 05. We're about to close out 06. First quarter next year, we want to bring you what you're asking for, that kind of reopen Metro Matters, look at it, global view of things. So I'm just suggesting this could possibly be deferred.
Well, I mean, the board will decide whether it wants to do that, but I have another issue that I want to raise, and that relates to the Southeast Bus Garage, quite apart from baseball or any other thing. At one time in this budget, we had, I think it was $30 or $40 million to do the Southeast Bus Garage, because everybody knew that something had to be done with it.
For years.
The money just sort of disappeared to other priorities because the district couldn't find a location for it. I mean, you know, that's sort of we suffered the unfortunate result of that. But at some point, Metro has to look at whatever its responsibility is for the Southeastern Bus Garage. And this $100 million I see here, nobody has mentioned that bus garage, and I believe that's kind of in the unfunded, that's in that $150 million. So I just think we need more integration. And
I agree, and I think I'm suggesting this is a first step in that process, and we want to keep coming back to you with probably a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger list, and eventually this begins to move into that realm of dedicated funding. We've said for years that Metro has unfunded capital needs. And what we're trying to do now is bring you the complete A to Z list. I can't do it all at once, so we're bringing you what we already know about. As more information becomes available, we can add to it. I agree completely with you about the bus garage. It sat idling in the CIP for years because of those issues. Metro Matters came along, and that was something that could be executed now, so that became the CIP. But there's no reason that shouldn't be back on the list.
Absolutely.
So what we're suggesting is a two-part process here. We continue to identify unexpended, uncommitted funds, $100 million right now, and on the other side of the ledger, a list of projects that in some prioritized fashion we recommend to you to move ahead for approval.
Thank you, Mr.
Now next, we had a lineup here, Mr. Zimmerman, Mr. Kaufman, Mayor Yule, in that order, please.
Mr. Chairman, I just follow a little bit on Dr. Smith's comments. I'm sure that everything that is in this list, has a sound basis in previous work and study and purpose. If you have to stand every day on a whole platform for a minute, then maybe it's not a bad idea. And in a particular environment, I think it could very well be exactly the right thing to do. Said we want to look for ways to improve the experience of the customer and a brighter ship. So I don't think we ought to be mocking things that have a valid basis to consider. Nonetheless, there clearly is a priority question, and I think it's also fair to raise that. And I think that's just a discussion overall points to the fact that some of these things are absolutely got to do, and a lot of them aren't. And in the present environment, that's an important distinction for us. And I think that part of what we're lacking here is something that really helps us to see what the priority ranking is. I am struck by the fact that some of these, including the one that decided, don't seem like they're quite at the same level of list. In particular, contrast sharply with our discussion a little while ago on the operating side, which I think we need to be focusing on really meeting the demand that's out there. The things that are in here that help us to do that are the things we ought to be focused on. And I think a reconsideration of what's on the list, whether that's involved in the referral or whatever it is, but that allows a particular
staff to go back and help us identify what a rank order prioritization should be, not only considering these themselves, but everything else, including the issue with the rail cars. We need to have some way of framing that so we can make responsible choices in the very constrained fiscal environment.
Thank you. Mr. Faulkner.
First, I'd like to echo the comment Parker made. This whole Metro Matters program is not a solution. It was the toehold that we're still dangling in the street. So that has to be the answer. So the second thing that I need some questions to Carol, since she's the one that did missionary work to get us the Metro Matters document. In terms of recognizing that as left is short by the 140, my reading the copy that the county staff gave us does say federal discretionary grant funds are not received on a timely basis without assuming integrated financial plan. The earlier discussion left out the clause, reads, and other direct cash resources not otherwise available. And we are looking at some cash resources that's available. So we have to acknowledge. The other thing in terms of looking at prioritization is constantly priorities often where you're standing at the time. But as was highlighted by our general manager, the issue of where we're out of compliance with code or other standards that keep us safe and functioning, I don't think we can dance around this issue. Also, I think in the interest of fully looking, as I understand it, the rail car wash facilities are shut down by the question of it's not opting to continue, had to shut down. Our riders every day are experiencing Yellow Line, they have a beautiful capital buildings in the district they can't see. They can't see out of here. So, as we come back in comedy with the item first raised, Chairman Graham, what are the priorities? How do we look at things of existing opportunity? What extent do we need to, by agreement, backfill Metro Matters plan? What are other items that, because of the sword being over our head since the Metro Matters initiative was approved, what do we have to step forward in front?
Now, Mayor Yule.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to echo what's already been said, rank order prioritization is certainly essential and necessary, but I must put in that, and also, for Metro Matters, the rail cars. I mean, we can't help that. We must find a way to fund and keep that program moving forward. But I must also put in for my jurisdiction the Wall Street bus plan. That's got to happen. Having some discussions with staff about it, but
it would seem that, am I mistaken in suggesting that there's some unreadiness to consider this today? on the other hand, we have had a high priority and really an emergency situation identified in the Greenbelt lifts. So would it be a matter of consensus if we could approve the Greenbelt lifts and hold the balance of this in abeyance? Is that a substitute motion in that regard, Mr. Chairman? It's been moved. Is there a second?
The car wash.
Sure. I think the car wash also.
Okay. So
then I'll second.
Okay.
So that what the motion is that we would proceed with the rail car wash facilities, West Falls Church, Alexandria, $6.3 million. And the Greenbelt lifts $3.03 million, and that these items would move forward, and the balance would be held in abeyance. That is the motion. Is there discussion on the substitution, Mr. Smith?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I have a question because we didn't dwell on it. I'm assuming
the answer is in here, and that is line one, FY05 project completion. You just have a what?
Sure. If we back up to page four.
I mean, these are projects that are underway that ran out of money? What is it?
These are projects that at the end of FY05 had not yet fully encumbered or obligated all of their funds. They were undergoing schedule delays, but we're now recommending that those projects be reauthorized to continue to completion.
But this is CIP money, not matters money, and it's rolled through, right?
FY05 was that half-pregnant year where there was some obligation basis and some expenditure basis. These were obligations, I remember right. Yeah, these were obligations. And it's unclear what we're supposed to do. So just as a safety net, we're coming back to you saying these are the things that were obligation basis. In the old world, they would have just continued on their way. I'm trying to open the budget and keep visible so you all see this going on.
Would you not be including these as well?
It would be good to include these. It is money rolling forward because it didn't get encumbered for whatever reason. It's okay. Not new.
Okay. I'd move an amendment to include attach these to the motion.
Agreement from the seconder, we just included.
Yeah, does that include Fort Totten?
Yes.
Yes. Well, not all of it.
Not all of it. Half a million, but the Fort Totten, let's now on page six. There is $2.5 million to complete the Morales station. If we don't add this money, we won't be able to complete the station.
Correct. Right? That project will come to a halt.
So there's two Fort Totten. Can we assume then that we would add both Fort Totten expenditures? Okay, so here's so the motion by consent, the motion that we have before us is $15.7 million. Project funding reauthorization described on page three.
Right.
And then on page six, we would have the Alexandria car wash, the Greenbelt lifts, and the Fort Totten police station.
Right. And may I ask a question? This is just information. On the Fort Totten station, what was the budgeted cost for that? 4.5.
It was originally 4.5. Then we'd add another 500,000, and then another 2.5 million on top. It's going to wind up being about 5 million.
I'm just surprised that we underestimated that so.
Yeah, me too.
Significant.
Me too.
Next time we bring this back, let's take another look at that. I mean, we started, we got to do it, but that's not good news.
Mm-mm.
That we're 50% above. No,
we've had a lot of discussion here in the building about that one.
Yeah, and you're saying we'll be able, okay, so
the original budget was way optimistic.
Okay, well, we want to talk about that later. I guess the only other project here that I have some real fondness for is the credit cards in the parking lot.
Yeah, that's a real good one.
I just think that is something we
ought to do. Well, Mrs. Mack, this is still your motion.
Then I would add that to my motion.
If there's
would
no
you
objection.
That,
I know you want the fire range in too. Okay?
I'm just sitting here watching.
No, no,
I
just want to do the
shoot
the
people with credit cards.
Credit cards.
Yes,
thank you, sir.
We're on the motion, which has been substituted, amended, rearranged. And is well understood by everybody.
For grant total
okay,
28.2.
Further discussion, hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no, the ayes have it. And the final matter before us is the approval to modify a contract to provide single access telephone number. This goes to Leona Aguirre.
Swan song.
Next week. Good morning, everybody. Before I start, I want to introduce Al Pegram, who is the customer service director. He's been with us for several years. He comes to us from cable and wireless, and he's going to be the one to make this work. The recommendation that we have for you today, we're going to be seeking your approvals so that we can amend an existing contract, modify an existing contract to do some reprogramming to our phone system in Silver Spring so that we end up with one number that customers can call for all service-related issues that they may have with Metro. Over the last couple years, we've been trying to build the functionality of our telephone system at Silver Spring. We've added a 24-hour capability for people to call and plan a trip. We've added Spanish trip planning. We're going to be adding next bus later this summer.
Thank you very much, Ms. Agarides. We're certainly very glad that you had this opportunity. There is a motion to approve, and there's a second.
Yeah, but the question.
Discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it.
And let me just say. Next week I'm going to bring you a really tough one, Mr. Graham.
Let me just say that this is approaching Leona's final day with the authority. And I know there'll be much claim to follow. But I know everyone is going to wish you all the best in your new adventure, and with the Golden
Triangle Business Improvement District,
which is something we know very well. It's one of our major downtown bids, and so we congratulate you on your new employment, and we thank you very much for everything that you've done at the authority.
And you know, thank you. This is a great. This is a great transit system. I have always wanted to work for Metro since moving to Washington, D.C. I love it. I love the people that I work with. I love the people we serve. I am so honored, and I am so excited to move on, and thank you very much.
I just want to add that I have followed your career. This will be your third position in the District of Columbia.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of that, and you'll be watching your star over at the Bid. So congratulations to you and Amisha.
Thank you very much. I will miss you too, but I will be working with Metro very much because transportation touches everybody, Metro touches everybody, and the Bid Board, they get it, they appreciate it, and I'm happy to be working with both groups.
Mr. Graham, I need to add something to this. You stole my thunder. This was part of the general manager's report for next week at the full board meeting, and I understand that I work for you, so the entire board of directors of Metro, and so whenever you want to steal my thunder, you should feel free to do it. But I'd like to add to that this is it's an exciting opportunity for Leona. I've worked closely with the Golden Triangle Bid, and I think that we've picked an incredible executive director, and we've lost an incredible assistant general manager. But the nice thing about working with a group like that is that we continue to get to work with a group like that, and it's good to have someone like Leona who understands us over.
That's excellent. Well, I just couldn't restrain my enthusiasm.
Apparently.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Everyone wants to end this meeting, I know. And everybody's very anxious for the real estate committee meeting, which follows immediately. But there is an item here which I don't want to let slip too quickly, and that is the subsequent budget committee agendas. There's something that's happened here, and I don't think we need to go into this at any length, but there's something substantive here, which is that we have moved up our fiscal 2008 budget guidance, which all of us will remember has typically happened in September. In fact, it used to happen much later than that, but now it's happening in July. And I just don't know how this happened, but I bet somebody else does. And why we're moving so rapidly. This is substantive because if we issue our guidance in July, then that has a way of short-circuiting a whole lot of other things. And one of the points I just want to make very, very quickly is the fact that we're all so committed, thanks to Mr. Kaufman and all of our efforts, to engage our customers, to engage the RAC and everything else, that by issuing this very early guidance, there is an impact on all of that. And I had a meeting just recently with those folks about this issue. So I don't know what we can do about this, Mr. Tenney.
May I clarify that? If you notice, it's an information item. What we're simply trying to do is actually start the budget process soon enough so that we can get that level of input that we've been criticized in the past for not having. Notice that it talks about a budget forecast, fair strategy, and budget guidance. The attempt is really to get a discussion going with the board of an overall direction that we need to go so that we can develop an FY08 budget and develop an FY08 budget strategy that isn't laden with surprises, frankly, for everyone as it goes along.
Well, then let's just emphasize that this is for information.
It is.
And so as we're providing it to the committee and to the board for information, we can also give that same opportunity to the RAC and other stakeholders so everybody can feel a part of this. Mr. Smith?
Yes, Mr. Graham. Well, I think in particular, given the earlier vote and discussion and where we stand on the 07 budget, you know, we may well be taking a clue from the Commonwealth Legislature in dealing with the budget this year, and we may still be dealing with the 07 budget in July, so there's no point in going into a way.
I'm not hoisting that as an example.
All right, so this meeting then is...
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that this, we have done this in the past, and it's really guidance for the guidance. So.
Yes.
It's guidance for the guidance. Okay, then let me stand corrected on that. We're having guidance on the guidance.